This morning we're going to turn in our Bibles to Psalm 63. And just to give you some background, throughout the scriptures, throughout redemptive history, throughout church history, we see this practice that many people write psalms. They write songs from a place of distress in their lives. We see it throughout David's life, throughout the book of Psalms. It's really many songs that David writes to the Lord in a place of distress, in a place of agony. David writes from a failed assassination attempt of Saul in his life in Psalm 18. Don't turn there, but just to give you an example, he writes, "The cords of death encompassed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord. From his temple, he heard my voice." Moses was a spiritual leader to the people of Israel. They were a wayward people, rebellious. They continued to stray away from God. They continued to disobey the commands of God. And he writes this in Psalm 90. He says, "For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants." We see again, elsewhere in the Psalms, an Israelite who had seen the destruction of Jerusalem, who had been taken into captivity, who is now in Babylon, who can see the traumatic vision of Jerusalem being ransacked and burned, playing over and over again in his mind, just these horrific things that happen in the destruction of Jerusalem. He laments in Psalm 137, "By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land?" And we see it also in Martin Luther's life. He wrote the song, the words of "A mighty fortress is our God," as he was facing persecution by the Roman Catholic Church. He writes, "A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing." And it's just an amazing practice that people, when they're in times of distress, they call upon the Lord. They sing out to the Lord. They cry out to the Lord. So today we're looking at Psalm 63. But I just want to give you a little bit of context, a little bit of background to what's happening here in Psalm 63. We're really going to be parking on the first couple verses. So when David wrote this, you notice how in your Bibles it says Psalm 63. It says something like, "A psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah." So he's running away from his son who's seeking his power, who's seeking his throne. To bring you up to speed, David's son Amnon has raped his sister Tamar. Then his brother Absalom avenged her shame and murdered Amnon, his brother. So David has some serious issues in his family. His one son is raping another daughter. His other son then murders that son. And now that same son is seeking to overthrow his throne. And because of this, Absalom is seeking David's throne. He's seeking to overpower David. And he's standing in the gates of the city. And he's telling the people, "Oh, David won't listen to your complaints." The gates of the city are where judgments were made. It's where, like, court cases would be held. And Absalom's there saying, "Oh, David's an unrighteous king. He's not even here to listen to you. But, oh, if I were king, I would hear you, my people." And he eventually gets to the point where he's able to get David to run away from the city. And so now David's out in the wilderness of Judah. His family's a mess. His daughter has been raped. His other son has been murdered. And now his one son, who he loves, is seeking to overthrow his kingdom. And as he's fleeing down into the wilderness, it's a descent in elevation about 1,067 meters. So this is about like coming down off of Table Mountain from Jerusalem down into the wilderness. And this isn't Kirstenbosch Gardens he's in. He's in a desolate, dry place. No water there. It's very, very dry, it's not a very nice place to be. And in the weariness of his soul, he writes these words. Look at verse 1. "O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water." Verse 5. "My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food. And my mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy." Verse 8. "My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me." And so he sings this song even though his son is seeking to kill him. He's looking to the Lord. He's not looking to his circumstances. He's looking beyond his circumstances to God for comfort. So, first thing I want you to understand is we seek God earnestly and we seek him early in times of hardship. The first verb that David uses in this verse is to look early. Sorry, what is it in English? Sorry, I'm looking in the wrong language. 62. I seek you earnestly. That word earnestly is the Hebrew word shahar, which could mean to look early or to look diligently for, as in someone who would look and wait for the dawn to come. So there is someone out vigilantly looking for the sun to rise. And so, do you have a habit of early in your times of tribulation, early in your times of testing, early in your times of distress, calling to the Lord, looking for the Lord? Or do you wait? Do you wait till it's your last resort? You've tried going to people, you've tried psychology books, you've tried other things, and oh yeah, I guess I should turn to the Lord. Do you seek to face your temptations in your own strength or in the strength of the Lord? So we seek him early, but we also seek him earnestly. You know, Muslims are very devout. They pray 5 times a day. And I'm not saying we should be like Muslims, but imagine if we took 5 times throughout our day to just refocus our attention on the Lord, on his promises, on the Great Commission, and seeking him for strength. Throughout our day, we just took small portions and we just set aside time to pray to the Lord. I mean, that could really change things. When we pray, God acts, God moves. So are we doing things in our own strength, in the strength of our own flesh? Or are we doing it with the help of the Lord, with the Spirit of God within us? Second thing I want you to see is we seek him with our whole being. You notice how he says, my soul thirsts for you, my flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land. We see David engaging with his whole being in worship. In verse 1, his soul thirsts. In verse 2, his eyes look. In verse 3, his lips praise. In verse 4, his hands are lifted. In verse 5, his soul is satisfied. In verse 5, again, his mouth praises. In verse 6, he meditates throughout the night. Verse 7, he sings for joy. In verse 8, he clings to God. So it's his whole being, his soul, his body. It's all involved in seeking after God and looking for God. Are you wholeheartedly seeking after the Lord in your times of trouble? Do you delight in God with your entire being? Here, the reality of David's love is awakened to the Lord with his whole being. He is deeply restless and unsatisfied without God, says one commentator. We hunger and we thirst for God. So this week, as you're going through the Great Commission course, there's going to be times that test you. There's going to be times that push you. You're going to be sleep deprived. You're going to not want to do some things. And are you just going to complain? Are you going to grumble about it? Or are you going to turn to the Lord and say, Lord, help me through this. God, I want to do this for your glory. I want to do this for your kingdom. I want this to be to your praise, to your honor. Even as you're sleep deprived on a night hike, that can be an act of worship to God. It doesn't have to be, oh, why are they making me do this? Or, oh, why am I having to prepare this sermon last minute? I don't even know how to preach a sermon. Toby. No, I'm just kidding. So what are you going to do in those times of testing? What are you going to do in those hardships in your life? Or maybe your life at home, your family life is a mess. Maybe you have friends that don't know the Lord. Maybe you have some conflict that is completely unresolved. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to take that to the Lord? Are you going to seek to do that, face that in your own strength? Will you turn to the presence of God to worship and to seek to grow through the trial and hardship, or will you complain and look to the world to satisfy you? We can even turn Christian work into a means of feeling satisfied. We can say, oh, well, I'm preaching, therefore I'm okay with the Lord, or I'm out evangelizing, therefore my soul is satisfied. Now, you need to set aside time where you personally are seeking to encounter the living God. This morning we sang the words of the song, It Is Well. And that was written by a man, Horatio Spafford, if I got that right. He was a lawyer, in 1871, and he had a bunch of properties, and they were all burned up in the Great Chicago Fire of 1873. And he planned to travel across the Atlantic Ocean with his family to Europe, but he had to stay behind to deal with all these lost assets he had, this lost property that had all been burned up. And so he sent his wife and his four daughters across the Atlantic. And as they were sailing across the Atlantic, their ship wrecked, and all four of his daughters drowned. And he received a telegram from his wife that said, "Saved alone." And in the midst of this devastation, in the midst of his children drowning, he penned the famous words of this hymn: "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll." I mean, you hear the imagery there. He's thinking about his children drowning. He says, "When sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. For me, be it Christ hence to live, if Jordan above me shall roll, no pain shall be mine, for in death as in life, thou wilt whisper thy peace to my soul. But Lord, 'tis for thee, for thy coming we wait. The sky, not the grave, is our goal. O trump of the angel, O voice of the Lord, blessed hope, blessed rest of my soul." You see, people like this teach us how to face the hardships in this life. He saw beyond his present circumstances. He looked to the Lord. So my challenge for you is, as you are going through this week, or even as you leave here and things begin to get hard back home, don't look to your circumstances. Look to the Lord for strength. Look to Him to be your strength, to be your joy, to be the one who pulls you through the wilderness of life. The only one whom we can find our satisfaction, peace, and joy in is Christ alone. So let's look to Him.